This is a Glassbox Media Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Blank Podcast. I'm Charles Poe Phillips, and with me is Jim Daly to talk with another well-known guest about their life, their career, and negotiating those difficult moments on the way. I did that the wrong way around today, didn't I?
I liked it. I really liked that. I think it's good to keep things fresh, I think. Keep on our toes. I think that's a nice way to do it. I think you should,
Or just do it wrong.
But you know what? That's a really nice moment, actually, because you had a little blank moment, but you rolled with it and you turned it into a better moment. And isn't that what this podcast is all about?
Well, I think we could argue about the better bit, but I definitely winged
it. I liked it. As you know, I love someone who wings things, and I actually think winging it is life's greatest skill.
Yeah.
If I'm being totally honest. So I'm well on board with that. I think if you want to change it up each week and do a little different intro, intended or not,
keeps people on their toes, isn't it? Because sometimes they'll be like, "Oh, am I listening to the right podcast?" Oh yeah, it is.
I think that's cool, mate. I think it's nice to do things differently. But it's good to be back. Yep, love to be back with another great guest this week. This is a really, really good one. I would say, if you're interested in the world of TV production, screenwriting,
getting things made,
this is a very interesting one. I think we really buried down into that.
Yeah, we did. We've got the wonderful Lawrence Prestige on to tell us about his new show that's coming out called Keep Calm and Carry On, which is a mockumentary about three families dealing with lockdown. And obviously, say it's sort of COVID with a small C.
It's more lockdown.
And the kind of dynamics of family, which is always funny and rich for comedy. And yeah, it's all about that. And we talked all about its kind of conception and its process of writing it, and then, you know, getting it from page to screen. It's coming out on Amazon this month, end of this month. So yeah, it's really interesting conversation. And you know, I'm sort of going for a film project myself at the moment, so it's great to empathise with someone who's had similar kind of the process of negotiating the film and TV industry is a new one for me, and obviously it was a new one for Lawrence as well. So it's really interesting to talk about it and hear his story.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's always a fascinating industry anyway, whether you're in it or not. So I think hearing some of the behind the scenes stuff is great. It's out on Prime Video September 28th, so next week, I think. And it's got a few of our Blank alumni in there. Kaylee Page Rees, Jess in Piazzi, so a few of our mates are in it as well. So definitely worth checking out. Do watch it, and let us know what you thought as well. You can obviously tweet and Instagram and Facebook us, and we love to hear from our guests about anything, really. But do check it out. And Lawrence is a great guy, and I can't believe, big Newcastle United fan, that we didn't actually talk about football until right at the end. In fact, then gets cut off. Actually, I don't even think it made the edit. We didn't get crowbarred in at all. We've got three big football fans.
Do you know what, Jim?
That's rare.
Last week we had the brilliant Emma Forrest, and you know, brilliant author and scriptwriter. And you managed to, you know, probably has no, I don't know, but I am assuming has no interest in football whatsoever.
I did it then.
And you were able to crowbar in some sort of analogy to football. The one week we have someone who actually really does have an interest in football, is passionate about it. Not one metaphor.
Again, I like to keep people on their toes. You know, that's what I said. I like, you know, just when people expect something from me, I like to twist it and give them something else. The main reason is I was so enjoying the conversation about his work, I completely forgot. And also, to be fair, normally we would start the conversation maybe about that kind of thing. But we were talking, of course, right at the start about the very sad news that Her Royal Highness, is that right? Her Royal Highness? I never know what the introduction is. But anyway, Queen Elizabeth passed away the second. Is it Her Royal Highness? Yeah, that is right. Isn't it? Or Her Majesty. I never know what the
Well, let's go with Majesty because that sounds better.
That sounds more like it. I think Royal Highness might possibly be for other
the lower tier.
Family.
Is that the lower next tier, tier down?
Tier
is it?
Two. Tier two.
She's
yeah.
Premier League. They're yeah. like. Right, football. Here, metaphor. Her Royal Highness people are the like Championship or EFL.
Their championship. Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
they're
English yeah. football.
EFL. Yeah, yeah, they are. No, she's definitely Premier League. So we are recording the day after that news broke, which is why we sort of were chatting to Lawrence about it. And,
yeah.
And yeah, I think we kick off sort of talking about how, you know, whatever you thought of the Royal Family. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's a big event. Like, it's huge. Yeah, yeah. It's something you knew was going to happen at some point.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, actually. That keeps on, like, I kind of knew it was going to happen, but you kind of not expecting what that looks like to a certain extent. Yeah. You kind of know it's going to be sort of wall-to-wall coverage on TV and internet and stuff.
Yeah.
But actually, when you're in it, you kind of, it's a bit kind of surreal.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's yeah, you don't really know sort of how to behave and whether this is what I was expecting. And it's all just a bit weird. So I think, you know, we kick off the conversation talking to Lawrence about that, really. Like, whatever you kind of feel about her or the family, it's okay to feel a bit weird by everything. So yeah, interesting times, which I guess actually kind of ties into his project as well, because that was a very weird time that we lived through as well. And that one, no one was expecting, I guess. So we didn't quite know how to behave or what to expect, but yeah, we're living through weird times, I guess, is basically.
Well, yeah, and it does feel like this kind of, you know, we've been through so many weird things. Obviously, we talked about 2020 with Lawrence, and that's when the show is based in that year.
Yeah,
and how it wasn't just the pandemic that, you know, we kind of forget all the other shitty things that happened that year, like Brexit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're obviously posting our affiliations to the mast here, but yeah, so like these disasters that happened, like Brexit, and obviously Trump was a good thing. We got rid of Trump. But Trump was out of office and we got a new president, so that was kind of more a better part of the year. But there was lots of other things that were kind of bad, as well as obviously the pandemic, which was this thing that we never had to deal with before. So there's lots of things that went on. And I think also, like, you know, the subsequent years as well, it's been tough, hasn't it? And obviously we're going through a very tough period at the moment as well, with the economy and having to deal with the Tories. And
the mask has just been ripped off, hasn't it, this episode?
Yeah, I'm sorry if there's any right-wing listeners. Jim and I are not there, so you know.
I think do you know what? I think it's fine. We have nailed our colours to the mast in previous episodes. Yeah, I think.
And
we might have some people who are differently political.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And that's
you're
totally
welcome.
Cool. Yeah, completely.
Yeah, yeah, just agree to disagree.
Yeah, I think that's cool. Yeah, we welcome all comers. Maybe not far right.
No. We don't want any Proud Boys or.
No. We draw the line at that.
But anyway, yeah, but there has been lots of horrible things going on, and it's been a very, very, what's the word? There's been a lot of turmoil.
Challenging time. But you know what, though? Out of the toughest times often comes the best art.
Yes.
And I think that's a good place to go on to talking with Lawrence, because that's exactly what's happened.
You know, absolutely.
He talks about how he came up with this idea and how he started the process. And that's what happens sometimes. In the toughest of times, people... deal with it by making the best art. So,
absolutely, yeah, yeah. From trauma comes great art. Yeah. So yeah, that's
completely.
Yeah. So I think obviously it's going to be a difficult period for the nation for a few weeks and months, as there's a transition as well into King Charles II, I think, or was he
third?
Third. Okay.
King Charles. Now, my mother-in-law and my wife are keen historians. Apparently he was going to go, he could have gone with another George, because they quite often take the titles that aren't actually their names. They are like family decided.
It's weird, isn't it?
A lot of George and Edwards, if you look at the history line from the last couple of years. He was going to be another George, and he wasn't going to be a Charles, because the history of the previous two King Charleses has not ended well. First King Charles lost his head, and second King Charles died of, and I might get this wrong, but I think it was a sexually transmitted disease.
Syphilis or something.
You think it was syphilis, because I think he had a lot of fun, I think is what. So I think it was kind of like, and I don't know, maybe royal people are so superstitious or whatever, but it was kind of like, oh, don't be a Charles. But obviously, he's waited long enough. I saw a great tweet that said, never give up on your dreams. Charles is 73 and he's just got his first job. So good luck to him.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Well, I was just thinking it's interesting changing your name for your new job. And I was wondering whether we should have taken podcast names when we started doing the podcast.
Well, I've got about 400 names anyway, because I'm Jimmy.
They're all
James,
on a theme now, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Well, to be fair, our guest, again, bringing it back. Sorry, I keep derailing it. Lawrence had another name with one of his first big acting job. And I won't say what it was, but, you know, he was playing a role and had another name for that. So another tie-in to our guest this week. Should we actually bring it back to Lawrence and should we just crack on with it?
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, we've been waffling on and on.
This is what we do. Anyway, this is the fantastic Lawrence Prestige on The Blank Podcast.
There's a bit of a controversy about the national anthem, just going on to that subject. Some people don't think it should be God Save the King, Queen, whatever. It should be Jerusalem, should be our national anthem. And I think actually it's a better song. Yeah. I don't know if you guys agree.
I think it should be any song by the band Queen. I think that would be.
Oh, we are the champions. No, it's a bit arrogant, isn't it?
Sorry. We are the champions.
Imagine like every England football match they play, we are the champions.
Well, it would be factually incorrect. Jerusalem is quite moving. I really like, you know, at the FA Cup final when they play Abide With Me.
Yeah.
I always get really teary with that. I really teary. Even if like Palace aren't in the final, which they rarely are, I still find that moment quite
well, maybe
teary.
We could brainstorm during this
new national
podcast. What should be the ultimate kind of national anthem? I mean, so we're recording this on the day after Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II has died. So we're obviously spitballing new options for the.
I saw a tweet that someone who was at the theatre, because I think the royal family said in technically protocol suggests that like all theatre, all sport, everything needs to be cancelled for the mourning period up until the funeral, I think. But right. I think they'd said that, like, theatre can go ahead. But, like, someone was at the theatre last night, and obviously the news broke, and then they sung the national anthem, and this person said, I watched 300 people unsure whether to sing God Save the King or God Save the Queen.
That is a bit of a tightrope to be walking on, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's been funny, obviously, like, with... Since the news has come out, I'm in like indifferent. Being a Newcastle United fan, I'm in different like sort of fan groups, you know, on Facebook, WhatsApp, and like ever since like 7 o'clock last night, the question has been: is the game on this weekend? Like,
I know, like, exactly,
RP and everything. But seriously, are we playing?
Priorities? I think that is in a lot of people's minds because there has been cancellations of various sporting events.
Well, like so I saw something this morning on The Athletic saying that in theory it should be cancelled, but they have, I guess the royal family, I guess, have said they can go ahead if they want to, and the Premier League are discussing it. So, oh no, Premier League matches this weekend to be called off, tweets Martin Ziegler 30 seconds ago.
Oh, well, classic, because I've got a ticket.
Oh yeah, you've got my season ticket. Oh my god, that is classic. I'll get you to sell us at some point, Charles.
Thanks, man. Anyway, sorry, Lawrence. We've curtailed this.
You've been upstaged.
Sorry. Yeah, we tried to get a spokesperson from the royal family to come on, but Paul Burrell wasn't available, unfortunately.
Paul Burrell. Oh my god, his diary is going to be packed today. It is. Sorry, with that, we will. Come into the normal conversation soon, sorry, but it is just a weird, I think. It's okay to like mark that it is a weird, it's a big thing. It's probably the biggest news story in the last few years, maybe. I don't know, maybe of my life. I don't know, it's big, isn't it? It's a, whatever you think of the royal family and stuff, and like I've never been a huge fan of stuff, but like it's okay to feel weird about it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know how much it would feel weird, like, you know, obviously she was poorly, she's 96 years old, but even like when we were getting these rumors yesterday, like you just kind of thought, ah, she'll be all right, you know.
She'll be
you know, next week she'll be, you know, doing something good, you know, making an appearance somewhere. And it wasn't until you sort of got that moment that, you know, that with BBC sort of, you know, properly announcing it, like, she'd passed away, it didn't sort of feel real. And I think I'm not like a massive royalist. Like I can respect the Queen, what she does, but in terms of, you know, the other lot, I'm not too bothered about them. But no, it was obviously sad because, you know, I guess for all our lives, we've just known this one. We'll never know another Queen. So, you know, that's having that sort of acknowledgement is interesting.
It's the first king for many of us, most people, first time we've ever had a king. I mean, my dad was born in 1947, so I guess technically he had a second king for him because she was coronated in 52, I think. Is that right?
Oh, you've been spotting up.
I've been reading a lot of Twitter.
You watched the news yesterday.
I've been reading a lot of... when you're freelance, you can watch a lot of TV. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just weird. We've got a king. That's just... Yeah, it's just all a bit weird.
Yeah. But I think that's the thing, because she's been part of our lives. You know, we've only known her as the head of the monarchy. And I guess that's the thing, isn't it? Like any big public figure that passes away... whether it's, you know, the Queen or some, you know, huge pop star, or, you know, even going to football, like when Maradona passed away. And what's interesting, one thing is that we do get like a coming together, like particularly with social media. Obviously, there's been some controversy, but generally speaking, most people have been putting out nice messages and, you know, there's been a sort of public grieving process.
Yeah. I always said... she was the Maradona of the royal family. So I completely agree. There's similarities there. That's her. That's not true at all. I think you're right, because it's like Constance, isn't it? It's like when people are Constance, and she has been obviously for a ridiculously long time, then yeah, it feels weird when they're then not there. And it has been a weird coming together as well.
Yeah, so... even like with Sky News earlier, I saw like obviously they did Harry leaving Balmoral, I think, earlier today. And one of these Sky News reporters sort of went, "Oh, Harry was the last to arrive last night, and he's the first to go this morning."
Oh,
and I just thought,
it
"What?
In.
Oh, yeah. Just like come
any
on,
any excuse." Oh.
I like Harry. I'm
yeah,
putting
I
out
do
there.
Too. Yeah, I think
would,
he seems like
I
the
would
most
be
normal
the same as him. Yeah, I'd be out of there, man. If I was like the scrutiny and stuff, I'd just be like, "Nah, I'm not having
he
this."
He seems
I'm
the
go
most.
I could
regular.
Totally get the idea of buying a little ranch in California, wherever they are, and just chilling out. My kids.
Definitely. Anyway. Oh man. Weird times. But
weird
I think,
times,
you know,
yeah.
Okay to acknowledge that. We're living through, I mean, God, last few years have been very, very weird times. So there'll be history books written about this.
Well,
about this period.
Let's move on from that, because weird times, obviously, Lawrence, has conjured up some creative juices for you because of the pandemic. You wrote this incredible new sitcom. Tell us about how it came about.
Yeah, I think, you know, when it was all, I mean, you guys will know as writers, you know, when you're sort of dealing with things that you want to sort of put right, I guess, and, you know, things that whether you're a comedy writer or write stories, you know, you sort of try and make sense of everything that's going on. And I always find that writing's cheaper than therapy to start with. Mm. So when you're sort of going through the lockdown like we all did, it was just talking about how we were all sort of feeling during the lockdown. Not necessarily expressing feelings about COVID too much, but just that sense of isolation, not being able to see your friends, family, and sort of being stuck in the same house as the people that you live with, and perhaps at different points driving you a bit nuts as well. Dealing with, you know, the COVID test for the first time that we all attempted to put up our nose and things like that. Dealing with the, you know, the unfit dad that's trying to do Joe Wicks with the kids or something like that. It was about those moments really. And I think over lockdown, I just started playing with different characters and ideas. This sitcom, I suppose, emerged from it.
Yeah. So tell us a bit about it. Obviously it's a mockumentary. So a documentary crew is kind of going into some families that are obviously dealing with the pandemic and COVID. Tell us a bit about the premise of it.
Yeah, so it's a mockumentary crew dealing with the year 2020 having, I guess, we have these documentary crews that go into three different houses. All the houses are sort of entwined in terms of the same family. We have a family where we have like a young couple with children. We have another couple where you have two older people in the house, and then you have a couple where we have a gay couple and an adopted daughter, and but they're all sort of intertwined together as a family. And yeah, we have these documentary crews that sort of are logging what COVID-19 was in the, you know, having to be in lockdown and stuff in these family houses. And that's kind of the premise of it. And we have a we don't try and make it too about COVID. I was very cautious when I was sort of writing it. You know, I don't think people want to deal with, you know, none of the characters get COVID or get poorly or have symptoms or things like that. It's all just about dealing with the homeschooling side as young parents or the kids missing their friends, you know, teenage daughter that's missing her boyfriend, wants to go see her boyfriend, having an living with your eccentric father that's come to live with you because, you know, of lockdown, and so he's not on his own, and just having those moments of exploring family up close and personal. Because of lockdown, you have a big microscope under it because you can't really go anywhere, and exploring those relationships, and I guess that's all how it happened, really.
Yeah, because it was a weird time, wasn't it? Like I almost feel a little bit like I haven't quite processed lockdown in a way, because we're out of it now, so it's like, okay, cool, well, you know, back to whatever, back to life and stuff. But actually, it was a strange time, and you're right, it really did like make you, I guess, kind of like reassess what you were doing and relationships, and shone this microscope and this like bright light on your family and stuff. It was just, it was a weird time. I think it's going to take us a while as a kind of, I was about to say a nation, but I guess as people, to process kind of what we went through.
Yeah, and I think just having those moments, like we say, we don't make it too much about COVID, but just all those things that sort of happened during lockdown, like we make reference at some points to the Tiger King, because the Tiger King was just this massive program at the time that everyone watched because they were in lockdown, and it was just this insane, it was just this insane escapism from lockdown. This crazy guy in America that was doing this, and we had Carol Baskin, and what, she killed her husband? What? And it just kind of having those, you sort of see with different, some of the family characters, there's little things that we use as escapism to deal with COVID, and just like drawn into the things like the Tiger King and things like that, and missing the football, and when's the football going to be back on, and trying to get hold of toilet roll because everyone's gone mad and decided that toilet roll for whatever reason is like gold dust, and thinking, you know, can you borrow me some toilet roll, you know, how much, and sort of a bit like that, you know. It was all a bit those kind of moments that you sort of look back and think, wow, we actually were going a bit nuts.
That was a bit dystopian, wasn't it? The whole toilet roll thing, like that. That's when it started to get a bit like, oh God, I think we're living in a weird sort of 1984 style dystopian future. And like the clapping on doorsteps stuff. When do we stop? Were people like, when do we stop clapping? Are we going to clap forever? Like when? And there was one week and everyone's just like, doing this anymore.
It's funny, wasn't it? It's like, you're sort of looking around at your neighbours, like peering through the curtains.
Who's out clapping? Who's not? Oh, number 44's not clapping. So disrespectful. Weird. Lots of weird things. I think, like, as humans, we like, in moments of like weirdness, I think we end up doing weird stuff. That was sounding more profound in my head. I heard it as it came out and it sounded a bit stupid, but, we do odd things, don't we? And that's just like the nature of being human, and nature of, like, I don't know, like the survival instinct slash but trying to be respectful to people slash panic makes us just do these odd things as humans. We sort of weirdly sort of follow the pack, but also, I don't know, we're just, it's funny, you don't know until you get put in those situations what you're going to be like or what you're going to do, and then you end up on your doorstep at 6 p.m. banging your pans. I mean, it's just an odd existence.
Yeah, and it was nice to kind of explore it as the characters that they're quite young parents as well, and having to knowing what to say to their kids, because I think some of my friends that have got kids and stuff, they would be questioned quite often. You know, when's things going to be back to normal? What's going on? When can we see people again? Things like that, and showing what the parents had to go through, being careful what to say, because I don't think parents didn't have the answers themselves. And I think that was really interesting to explore the moments of comedy out of COVID, but the moments of where people just genuinely weren't sure what was going on.
Yeah, and I would say that, you know, obviously being a parent of two teenagers, it was a difficult moment. And, you know, our eldest was very anxious for it, and had, and actually started to get sort of health anxiety because of it. Because of just, I think, just that rolling news and seeing stuff, and he was Googling things and all sorts of things. And I think a lot of, particularly teenagers, actually, I know a lot of friends have got secondary school age children, really did find it difficult to process it, more so than little ones. I mean, kids are generally, you know, at some, in some respects, very resilient.
Yeah.
And I was amazed, actually, how our kids kind of rode the whole thing. And just like, okay, we're at home, we're, you know, and, you know, but I think sort of post, when you're starting to come out of that thing, then those, maybe those things hit them a little bit more. But yeah, it's tricky to have those conversations, because, you know, you're worried as a, you know, as a parent, obviously about their health, but, you know, obviously about what's generally going on in the world. You know, it was quite stark at points, wasn't it? So yeah, it was a very challenging time, but it's great that you've addressed that in the show, as well as the kind of comedy. And I was going to say that, obviously, as we've been speaking, it's obviously rich for comedy moments as well. You've got particularly like the dynamics of families. That's always funny, isn't it? I mean, all the classic kind of,
yeah,
if you think things like the Royal Family and various other comedies where when a family's been at the center of things, it's, you know, there's so much hilarity and funny scenarios that you can put those families in.
Yeah, and even just having the, I mean, we have a reference when we had the COVID, obviously we did have the Queen, going back to the Queen, we'd have the Queen do her sort of speech, you know, the "We'll Meet Again" sort of thing.
Yeah,
just having you know, touching on that with some of the characters, and just one of the camper characters that we have getting very emotional with the fact the Queen's just you know, delivered this speech, and, you know, it's very you know, it was fun, just like tweaking into those things that happened during COVID, the you know, the non-stop conferences we had with Boris, just sort of going "graph please" or "chart please."
Oh my god, yeah, they were like every half hour.
Yeah. Yeah, and just sort of reminiscing on that, and how some of the characters we're dealing with that repetitiveness, and, you know, yeah, it was all interesting. I mean, 2020 itself, it wasn't just all about COVID. Like, so much happened during that year that just wasn't, you know, all about COVID. We had Brexit, for example, going on at the same time as well. Yeah. We had the stuff with George Floyd, you know, it was just a crazy year, and there was just so much happening at the same time. And it was all, the news was just very full on, wasn't it? You know, and then, you know, and just dealing with that as a family, I think.
Was the American election that year as well? Was that 2021?
That was that would have been the end of that year, I think.
Yeah, the end of the year.
Because 2016 was the previous one, so 4 years.
So there was that as well. There was the whole Trump stuff as well. God.
Yeah.
My God, what a
rubbish year.
Yeah, it was such a ridiculous year.
Oh, my God. So it's called Keep Calm and Carry On.
Yep.
So again, little things back to the Queen. Feels like a very sort of Queen-related thing. Prime Video have acquired it. What stage are you at the moment?
It's all ready to go. I think the release date's on the 28th of September. So we're looking to hopefully people will watch it, and, you know, we'll be able to do more episodes of it. We've got three episodes and a Christmas special is what we recorded, and Christmas episode kind of being the reunion of we're all allowed to kind of see each other again for Christmas. That was really fun to record, because I think we were allowed for like a day, weren't we, or something at Christmas. It didn't work out too well, but we did get to see people at Christmas. I mean, we had a wonderful cast. I was really, you know, chuffed with the people that we got on board. You know, Harriet Thorpe playing my mother-in-law, Kelly Shirley from, you know, done EastEnders and The Office and In the Long Run, and Jess as well, Jess and Piazzi and Holly Matthews have been amazing people that liked the script and the characters that we sort of pitched them, and they were happy to go on board, so it was great to have those guys.
And of course yourself.
So
what was that like? Because obviously I know you as a children's writer, but I didn't know you did dramatics as well.
Yeah. you know, dramatics of sort of doing panto is kind of as far as I would do panto as a teenager, and sort of did it till my early to mid 20s really, and did a few musicals. I worked in Disneyland for a while in Paris, and I always just took a step back from acting because it was more just about I need to make more money, to be honest. And that's sort of where the writing sort of came from in terms of getting into children's writing. But yeah, it was just something that I wanted to try. And I think, you know, unless you try things, it's what people say to me. I mean, you probably know as writers yourself, you get so many people that will always sort of say to you, I've got an idea for a story or a sitcom. And it's kind of go, okay, well, like, you know, have you written it yet? No. And it never goes any further because people just say they're too busy or they find the time, and it's, but it's being that, having that discipline to write something. And I think that's half the battle, really, is just making sure you, if you believe strongly in the idea that you've got, is making sure you're dedicated to writing it.
Yeah, definitely. It's the hardest process, going from sort of brain to page and actually making something happen, and also being okay with the fact that the first draft will probably be terrible, the second draft will be probably slightly less terrible, and by third draft you might actually have something you quite like and can form into a final tangible thing. But like, it's, I think people are really scared of that process, but it's something that everyone goes through, like whether you're someone who does it for fun or a professional writer or screenwriter or whatever, it's just, that is just kind of the process of writing, and you have to kind of get over that fear, I guess, a little bit, and actually just do the thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember something that Felicity Dahl said to me when I was writing books for children, and I got to meet her. You know, she said when Roald Dahl was writing, he would do his, I think she said he'd do 4 hours a day, sort of 2 hours, sort of 10 till 12, and then 4 till 6. And no matter how, you know, much he was struggling, or like, you know, would have writer's block, he would just keep writing no matter how rubbish it was. And, you know, he'd go back to, as long as there was something there for him to do, you know, there'd be points at this, you know, points when you're writing that you kind of think, oh, I don't know where to go next, that's not going to be crap. But Roald Dahl will, he would just keep writing, you know, as silly or as rubbish as it would sound, he would just keep doing it and persevere and go back to it. And that was something that stayed with me, because there's been things that, you know, writing Keep Calm and Carry On, it'd be like episode 2, episode 3, and you'd be like, right, how do I start this episode? I don't know how to start it. And it'd just be like, right, just do something. Like, you can start with someone doing a COVID test, or it could start with, you know, it might be rubbish, but let's just see how... what happens, you know. And if I could send it to people and they might have suggestion how to tweak it and fix it, and yeah, that's fine. But yeah, I think it's just getting something down that is really important when you are writing.
Yeah. And how did you find going from, obviously, you know, you've done lots of children's books, but going to writing a script, which is obviously very different, how did you find that transition?
Yeah, the format, I think, was when I first had this draft of the first episode, it was just written so unprofessionally, it was ridiculous. It was just like on Word and just like, you know, writing a bit of text, or they're in their room doing this or whatever, and you know, then just write Harry says this. So yeah, it was learning about all the sort of stage directions and stuff, but with the director we had called Martin, he was really good at sort of helping me transition it from
have you got a copy of Final Draft now?
Yeah, that was the thing. He said to me, he said, this is the thing much you need easier, to download. Yeah. He said, this is the thing you need to download. And and obviously that was a game changer, having the Final Draft to do it. So yeah, any writers, I'll plug it.
Get Final Draft. Because if you're writing to write a script, then, or even like a play or anything, it just makes life so much easier, because you just press the insert button and you've got your cut tos and your internals and your externals. And
yeah, because you can learn. I imagine that might be something that puts people off as well, like the technical side of it, and maybe not being trained in that area or knowing how to write in a certain way. But like, you can pick that stuff up. Like, if you've got a good idea and you feel passionate about it, all that stuff will come later.
And do you know what? There's also loads of like film scripts and stuff that you can download online. So you can, you know, pick a favorite movie of yours and you'd probably be able to find the script, and you can see how direction and stuff is put in and dialogue works. You kind of learn it quite rapidly, actually. But it is a very different kind of writing. Very different.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, as well, Warren Dudley was great to sort of get advice from. You know, having a chat with him, because great guy. He was obviously he's been doing his own stuff. I think he had a film sort of come out recently.
Yeah, Six Years Gone is brilliant, actually. Yeah, quite harrowing, but very.
Yeah, good. And sort of asking him about, you know, what I can use to sort of make the transition, because he's done writing some books as well. He's started to write novels as well. So yeah, he was really useful to have, and hopefully he's not too bummed out about Brighton at the minute, because losing everyone.
I know. Yeah. I was. You know,
I mean, we don't want to celebrate too much as Palestinians, do we? Yeah, we don't want to rub it in too much. But, yeah, hopefully it'll be the downfall of Brighton. I guess when you're a creative, I guess, and you're a writer, and you whatever kind of like format you do it in, you have to be quite good at learning how to take notes and take direction sometimes, and I guess like that can be something that puts people off, or maybe if you haven't done it before and you're in that space and you've worked on this thing, you send it to someone and they're like, it's a bit like being back at school and getting the red marks from the teacher, and you're like, oh okay, this doesn't work, that can feel like really like personal, I guess, sometimes, or like a bit of an attack, and you have to be open to like, okay, this person maybe knows more than me, they're trying to help me, and be okay to taking notes and stuff. But then that's part of learning the process of being creative as well, that other people's input can be really useful, but you have to understand and learn that sometimes what you're doing isn't going to be that good, and sort of accepting that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's never bothered me too much. I don't think my ego is quite that big where some people will just be like, no, this, you know, I'm right, this has to stay. Yeah. Like, you know, I think because it might be because I'm making that transition into, you know, sort of television rather than children's books. I just sort of trust the people we have around us that know how television works. You know, Kaylee's producer, and Martin we had as a director. You know, you sort of trust their knowledge because they've kind of done it before. Yeah. And it doesn't feel right me kind of being like, no, we should do it like this, or, you know, because I write kids' books. So it's been a different sort of learning curve for me. But, you know, there was only, I think, one or two things that, you know, you felt strongly about that you sort of go to bat for as the writer, being like, no, I really want to keep this moment. Or, but on the whole, I think you really, I think, you know, if you've got a team around you and you sort of realise and accept that everyone's got the show's best interest at heart, no one's trying to derail it, no one's trying to tear it apart, you're all on the same team, and ultimately you all want what's best. So I think it's important to listen to the guys on your team that have that experience, because you know, no one's trying to tear it down, everyone's trying to make it the best it can be. So it's important to listen to those people, and I think, again, the people that want to have those ideas that they say they have and want to write things, they get sometimes they think it's perfect the way it is, and they don't want it to have it changed. And you've got to be open to change, because I mean, you two will know, and if anything that you write is never going to be how it was the first original time you finish something.
That's the wonderful thing about collaboration as well. I mean, that I, you know, I love that, and I think imagine, like, particularly working on this project, you know you start working with people that you trust with your work, and you know, like you say, you can accept their ideas and stuff, and that's the wonderful thing about collaboration. And well, I've always really enjoyed collaborating on most of the projects I do. It's a collaboration, and I think even I think a lot of people have that misconception that writing, like books, is you know, obviously that first draft is often a solitary thing, but once you get involved with a publisher, you know, it becomes a collaboration as well, because we're working with an editor and a sales team, and they've all got their opinions on stuff, and you have to sometimes make compromises. But that's the good thing, because at the end of the day, like you say, you're all aiming to make something really, really special.
Yeah.
Whatever it might be, whether it's a TV show, a book, or a piece of art, or a comedy routine, you know, I think, yeah, you're all going towards the same goal. So I think that's the wonderful thing about collaboration. Tell us a bit about how it came about, though. How you kind of got this thing made? Because it's not easy to get shows made.
Yeah.
Obviously, we had the first draft of the pilot, and the concept of it, the characters, and sort of what could happen from the first episode to sort of going forward with it. And obviously, knowing Kaylee, she's a producer for her own production company, just doing really well. And, you know, she's doing really well. I think she was, you know, acknowledged by Forbes quite recently.
Wow.
And sort of sent her the first episode that we had and ideas for a few following episodes. And she loved it. She loved the characters and things like that. And she obviously knows people that invest in these sort of things, you know, with film and TV series. I know there are a couple of people being a bit like, oh, is it about COVID? We don't know if people will be kind of ready to deal with that. But acknowledging that it did have a life beyond COVID, it wasn't about COVID. And I think when people read the script and watch it, you know, you soon realize it's, yeah, we're all in a isolation and lockdown because of COVID, but the show isn't about COVID at all. It's about the families in lockdown and dealing with that. And yeah, you know, and I think a few of the investors that we had liked it. You know, we got a couple of people attached to it, cast members that said they would sign on to do it if it, you know, if it got funded. And yeah, I think that's sort of how it all began, really. And yeah, and you know, I know we had chats with ITV and Amazon were the kind of the two that we were really discussing the platform for it, and it just seemed the best home for it would be Amazon, sort of long term.
That must have been so exciting when those conversations are happening, and you know you're talking to these like big platforms, and then you're like, oh my god, this is happening. That must have been really quite an exciting space to be in.
Yeah, I think until Kaylee sort of said we're doing it with Amazon, like that was the point that I really accepted, like, wow, this is happening. Because we probably both know as well, anything can happen. There could have been like another lockdown, and you know, in real life, and everyone would have gone, no, we're not touching this program with a barge pole now because people are dealing with it. Anything could have happened. And it, you know, even when we were having discussions with places like ITV and things like that, it was you know, for me, I'm not going to sort of believe it until it's all sort of signed, sealed and delivered. It's the same when you're writing a children's book and things like that. You know, you don't sort of believe it until it's all done and dusted.
Yeah.
But it's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a weird. Yeah. I think with anything creative like that, maybe it's not a creative thing. Maybe it's a British thing. I don't know. But I'm always expecting things to like fall apart at the last minute. Like, anything.
I'm so never cynical. Really this happy. This is the problem, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I don't know if
we become because cynicism, I think a lot of creative people, we tread a tightrope, I think, a little bit between being cynical about stuff and then being dreamy, living in a dream world.
Yeah,
and it's this kind of we're sort of halfway in between sometimes, and sometimes you're heading down one area and one, and the other one you're walking up the tightrope to the other. I think because, like you, Lawrence, and I think probably like you, Jim, as well, had things that don't work out.
Loads,
exactly. So you are always a little cynical until the thing is kind of there, until you're standing on set or you're you know, in front of a crowd of people or whatever it might be, you know, or the book's in your hand.
I never tell people anything's happening until like either it's happened or like the money's in my account or like it's got too far down the line that I, you know, it can't fall apart. I can't back out. I rarely tell people because I hate being in that situation where you tell people and then it doesn't happen. And you've got to be like, or they're like, oh, how's that thing going? Like, oh, no, it didn't happen.
I've made that mistake before.
Yeah, you just hold off until.
Oh, hey guys, I've got this really cool thing. Yeah. Hey, I'm going to tell everybody, and then that's the only thing. That's the opening gambit in the conversation every time. Oh, so how's that thing going? You're like, oh, it's not happened.
Yeah,
you're full of shit, Charles.
And then you worry that, like, yeah. And then you worry that, like, they think, like, oh, you're a huge failure or something, or you personally have fucked it up somehow.
I'm really sorry that didn't happen.
Yeah, it's those, because you know, at the back of their mind, they're constantly thinking anyway, when's he going to give up this hobby? When's he going to stop fucking around and like get a proper job? Which is something that you tell yourself every day anyway, so you don't need someone else to tell you. And then you feel like, feel like a massive failure. But actually the truth is that in these worlds, these projects start and stop all the time. It is just the nature of stuff. Some projects start, some huge projects start and don't reach completion. Some are in series for a couple of episodes. Some are one series. Some huge American stuff gets cancelled after one season. You think, why the fuck has that been cancelled? And it's just these things just happen. But if you're in the industry, you sort of are aware of that. But I don't know, maybe people that aren't don't. And then you get panicky that you basically going to come across as a huge failure, which I think is basically the sort of driving force behind any creatives that sort of keeps that underlying anxiety bubbling away, that you think everyone's going to think you're a huge failure, essentially.
Well, I was going to say as well, Lawrence, look, you know, you should be super proud of yourself, because I think someone, a fellow screenwriter, told me the other day, like, only 90% of scripts ever get read, right? So, you know, so you're in that top 10% of people that have actually had something read, you know, just read.
Yeah.
And not that alone. So I don't know what the statistics is on things getting made, but so that's exciting. Do you know what I mean? I think, yeah, give yourself a win is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it's it is nice, because, you know, for years, I guess, you know, when you sort of, when you meet people and you sort of, they ask you what you do and you sort of say you're a writer, they kind of go, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Like they think you're sort of saying like it's a really cute word.
And what do you do for money?
Yeah. Yeah. And so when you kind of, you know, have something that where children's books gets published or, you know, something like this happens, it's nice to kind of be like, look, I am, it's real.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah. Yeah.
Because you do kind of get that condescending, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Cute. Sometimes when you say you're a writer, so yeah, it is nice to have that moment. But yeah, like things get cancelled all the time. Like, you know, we had the music. I had one of my children's books that was being adapted onto stage, and you know that was going on for years. They started late 2016, sort of putting it together. It went through all these stages and funding and previews, and it was just, the first lockdown happened with COVID, and it just, that was it. It just never it just, the funding wasn't there anymore. They didn't want to do. And so, yeah, these things happen. And so it's nice. So you just sort of keep your feet on the ground till, you know, something's actually going to be out there now.
I'd see that as an opportunity for you to adapt it into a film or something, you know?
Yeah, who knows? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Opportunities are always there. I guess as well, like... I completely agree with all that and sort of being in that lovely moment where you can kind of like prove yourself. But like, also, and this came up with a few previous guests on the podcast, that like being in a state where maybe the creative staff isn't bringing in as much money at the moment or whatever, and you're kind of working on stuff and having to do another job alongside it, maybe something unrelated, maybe something slightly related, but a bill paying job alongside it, doesn't make you any less of the creative side of what you are, doesn't make you any less of a writer or less of a comedian or an actor or whatever. And it's like getting to a place where you're okay with that, because I think, again, like we project onto other people the anxieties that, like, well, if I'm not, you know, if I'm not doing stand-up every day of the week and getting paid for that, well, then I can't be a comedian. And I'm projecting that onto people, and most people probably don't think that, and probably think, oh cool, he's getting to do bits and bobs and maybe he's doing a bit of podcasting or online stuff or whatever, and he's making it happen. Whereas in my head, I'm like, I'm not a pure comedian. So it's like being okay with the sort of transient side of work and life, and accepting that, and accepting yourself in that world is okay, as well as those good moments when things are coming together.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely agree. Yeah. I mean, again, it's just important to have those people around you that believe in what you've got, you know, and believe in what you're doing as well. Like, with the cast, you know, we didn't have the biggest budget in the world, but from doing a bit of podcasting myself, you know, and some of those relationships that you had with Jess and Kelly and Holly, it was, you know, it was nice to be able to cut out the middleman and kind of be like, this is the script, do you like it, would you do a bit for this for me? And, you know, and having those good people that just like what you've written and believe that it could go somewhere was amazing to have.
Yeah, I can speak from experience, as agents cause a lot of issues.
Yes.
If you can go to the person directly, it's much easier. Much easier. Agents ask awkward questions about stuff that you can't answer. And so, yeah, I totally think that's great. And it's great that you can, yeah, if you could, there's people, again, like we're going back to that thing, like there's people you can trust with it, with your story.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing you can find, is if you can find someone that you trust with it, and we'll go out of the way to make it good.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, agents are annoying. Yeah. let's go back to that. Let's have a little rant about them. No. Yeah. We had a couple of people that agreed to do it, you know, quite big names agreed to do it. They liked it. They agreed when we sort of personally talked to them about the, the fee involved, they're more happy to do it. But then, you know, it's like, okay, well, we need to get final confirmation from my agent. And then you'd sort of, the agent would just kind of put a spanner in the works and just, where's my money? When, you know, I'm not getting much money from this as the agent. But it's just, you know, it'd be, that could be frustrating. And then they'd tell their client not to do the show, which was annoying. But
going through this very similar thing at the moment with a project, and it's just, it's frustrating because you have to, it's this sort of chicken and egg thing where you're, you know, and you'll know this, Lawrence, from the experience, you know, you can't get finance without the, with that, you know, for people who have, are listening who don't know how it works, and I didn't know how it worked, is you often with projects, you can't get finance unless you've got like some star names attached to, but can't often get star names attached. And if you've got finance, because you've got to offer the money.
Yeah.
And it's this weird chicken and egg. And then obviously if you've got an agent in there who's looking out for their client, which I totally understand, not only are they obviously looking for their percentage, but they are also looking to make sure that that product is going to be a good one and it's going to be seen by as many people as possible. So they're looking for the best distributors and the best, you know, platform for their client to be on. So there's that as well, as that other thing that, you know, and it's something I've sort of learned along the way. But if you can bypass that in any way, it's really helpful, because, you know, there are people that want to do projects because they love the script, you know, they love the story and want to be involved in that. And I think, I guess in that, in some ways, it's a shame that I think that maybe some people will miss out on good projects because of an agent or a manager that's not necessarily keen on them doing it for maybe commercial reasons, which is a real shame.
Yeah, it is a shame. But I, you know, a lot of it has been, you know, I've been involved in sort of a TV series industry that, you know, again, you sort of take it on the chin. Nothing's personal. It's just it's just business, isn't it? And it has to, you know, if someone's got a certain agent or agency attached to them, it has to be, has to work for everyone. And sometimes that's not always workable.
And no.
Should say as well, there are lots of good agents out there who do obviously are good to work with and do. Have everyone.
Yeah, I don't want this to come across as agent bashing because at the end of the day, the agent is looking after their client.
Yeah.
You know, and that is absolutely fair enough. It's just one of the frustrations of the process, I guess, is what I'm...
But like life in general, some people are easier to work with than others. And that's just life in general. And it's sometimes it's a personality thing and stuff. But you're right. I think, looking after client's best intentions, I think, is a good way to say it. But I'm sure there are good agents out there who do go the extra mile and do try and make things happen and stuff, and are good to work with and stuff. So, but
like some of the agents, you know, that we have with the clients that we've got on the show are great. You know, really supportive and, you know, want to help. You know, because it's advantage to them, want to help promote the show and do everything they can when it comes out, because it's an advantage to them and with their interests at heart as well. So some of the agents have been really great to deal with.
Good. Yeah. We covered ourselves. Don't worry. We're okay. We've covered all bases. Don't worry. We're okay. We're not going to get shut down.
It's funny, isn't it, though? Because when you've got something, when you're going through something with something, you want to kind of, it's nice to be able to like have someone to empathize with on it. You know, it's nice to have these conversations with someone. Oh, you get it. You get it. Okay. You know, you've known those frustrations. Yeah. Okay. I can have a little vent now and I feel a lot better about it because I know someone else is having similar things. So it's
but in projects,
and it's a learning curve at the end of the day, isn't it?
Completely. But in projects that bit, and also, and I think it's nice to be on a learning curve and accept you are and be like, okay, I'm learning about this process, I'm learning more stuff, and like, I'm interacting with people who are going to help me learn more and be better, and that's really exciting. But any huge projects, any projects that big are going to have bumps along the way. Like, nothing that big is going to be smooth. Like, that's just the nature of work and the nature of people. Like, whatever industry you're in, it's going to have bumps along the way. And I think that's another thing as well, like being, again, like open and accepting that some of these conversations are going to be hard, some of these are going to be really frustrating. That's okay, it's part of the process, and we'll get through it. I think that's another sort of, you know, maybe it's an age thing. The older I get, the more I think accepting of that kind of stuff I am. And being like, okay, it's just part of it. It's fucking annoying. And it's okay, but like to acknowledge that, but it's like, we'll get through it and it's going to be okay. So I think that's just the nature of certainly creative stuff, but just big projects in general. Nothing.
Also, I think from everybody I've talked to, like TV and film, they're weird industries, like super weird compared to other creative industries, which I kind of know of a bit more, I've had experience of. Going into these, this industry, they're quite strange, the way that things work. And I guess part of the learning curve of learning how, and again, accepting that that is just how it works in that particular industry. And that's just how it's worked for 60 years or something. And just accepting that to a certain extent. Like you say, riding the waves of this interesting new path you've set yourself upon and wish that you hadn't.
well, speaking of paths then, because going back, I mean, we normally do this right at the start of the podcast. We are now 45 minutes in. So was acting the dream then back in the day before sort of writing came along?
I think so. I think for me, I had my biggest influence was Robin Williams in terms of just creativity and an actor. Just being mesmerized by him as, first of all, as a kid, watching him as the genie in Aladdin, and then sort of Mrs. Doubtfire. Then sort of as a teenager and young adult, you just sort of seeing the acting ability and sort of the more serious films that he did as well. And, that was like Dead Poets Society and things like that he did, and Good Will Hunting. So just having those, just sort of diverse actor that could do, who could be the funniest person in the world to a very straight, serious actor, was something that mesmerised me. And that was sort of that sense of play, I think. Not necessarily just acting, but he was all about that sense of improv and play, Robin Williams. And that was the sense of, wanting to explore as an actor. You know, when I got to go to work in Disneyland and doing Panto, we did have that sense of being able to play and have fun. But then, taking those sort of skills of play and discovery and exploring as a writer as well, being silly as a kid's writer and things like that was something how it all started. But yeah, I mean, acting was kind of the first thing that I really sort of pursued. And anyone that, you guys will know lots of actors, I'm sure, and it's great when you have work, but it's scary when you don't. And and sort of having to make a decision as I got into my 20s whether I wanted to keep living like that, of just this uncertainty of just waiting for Panto every year to get at work, was something that I wasn't sure if I could stomach all the time. So yeah, tried different things from acting, and I've just been able to, I guess, write something, not thinking I'd be acting in it, but it just sort of naturally happened to save a few quid.
No, because you were right for the part. And I think actually having, obviously having written it as well, you're very close to it. So, it's nice that, and I guess you would have been on set most of the time anyway, so you might as well kind of be involved in that way. But, and obviously, was it enjoyable though as well?
Yeah, it was enjoyable. Like, it was, the days were, they were long days, especially for the kids. But at the same time, would when you were filming and doing takes, it was all quite quick. You almost wish you had a couple more chances to do a take or something. But no, it was really enjoyable, and I was just, I suppose, mesmerized to some extent to how it all just worked. And it was all just sort of the guy, the crew, the director, it just all seemed quite effortless for them. They knew exactly what they were doing, they knew how long they had on each scene and when to move, to move on to the next scene, setting up everything. It was all quite smooth for them, and just sort of seeing how these guys, obviously so used to working on sets and things like that, and just been able to kind of almost on autopilot mode just know what they're doing, because it just seemed that there was so much work to do, and making sure there'd be days where I thought, we're not going to get through the whole schedule today, but somehow they managed to. And that was interesting to see how that all worked.
How long was the shoot then altogether?
We did it all quite quickly, so I think it was all done in sort of just under a month, about 3.5 weeks of all the houses as well. Yeah, it was all quite quick. And we did the Christmas episode first. It was like the fourth episode was kind of done, the first thing we shot. And that day was obviously the most craziest day because we had all the cast together because obviously it's that family reunion thing. And that was the first day of shooting. And yeah, that was just an insane day because it was just everyone was kind of on set for the first time together and working out the how the day would work and getting all the scenes and shots that we needed for the characters. Yeah, that was a bit of a crazy day. But yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, you're such and a...
You're gone, Jim.
There you go.
Now, I was going to say, were you... when you, even when you weren't acting, were you on set and were there changes to script? Were you sort of, was there an amount of improvisation? Was things, were you able to do that a little bit more on set, be creative on set?
Yeah, so sometimes it was like, I think, you know, me and the director, Martin, we spoke about that before. Like, you know, I wasn't obsessed with the script if people weren't exactly word for word, you know. And I think it was important to have that sense of with play and, you know, trying scenes differently. So yeah, we weren't sort of really strict with the lines. We did try and everyone was had the opportunity to play and to try things that that might work, you know. For example, like I said, for the kids, the younger kids you have in the show, like it might be quite a long day for them. And sometimes they were getting a bit restless generally because it was long days and they might be sort of going at each other a little bit, sniping at each other.
Methods.
And So
let's wear the kids out, they'd be brilliant.
Yeah, so me and Kelly might be doing a scene and you might hear some of the kids in the background and the director, Martin, would be like, no, let's try this, let's do the scene with them making noise in the background because it's real. And it's like the kids are going on at each other, we're trying to do this scene, but the kids are really sort of winding each other up in real life, sort of the next door. So yeah, it was just, so we tried things like that, which was really fun.
It sounds like you had a great director. I think that sounds like a really good someone to work with who sort of gets it. Just going back to that thing you were saying about filming. It's so true. Like, you're filming a scene sometimes and then, like, as the performer, you're like, got to get this right. Okay, that wasn't very good. Like, okay, next take maybe. And then they're like, okay, we got it. Move on. And you're like, wait, really? Was that good? Was it? Was it? Are you sure? Are you sure that wasn't terrible? Like, that, I think that's a weird juxtaposition between being sort of performer and then other side of the camera.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. It's you do feel like you. I think like you do two or three takes, and you think, right, I'm getting into it now. And then like suddenly the director will be like, right, rap on that bit. And you're like, what? You're like, I want to do like another two. But you just trust. From the bits that I've seen, it looks like we've got something good.
It was all right. Yeah, it paid off.
Yeah.
That's great. No, because you hear about was it Stanley Kubrick used to do like 50 takes or something ridiculous. God. Just to get like the different nuances of performance, and he's like, but I mean, it take him like 6 months to shoot a film. I think Eyes Wide Shut took like 2 years to make or something. That's overkill, but it's nice if you can get an opportunity to have a couple more goes at it. But I can understand, like, you know, it's time and money and setup and all that kind of stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, because after a while, everyone just gets fucking annoyed. Everyone just gets tired and wants to go home. Your final few takes just be like really angry ones, really angry, tired. Maybe that's what you want. Maybe that's the energy you need.
That's Kubrick was going for. Just really fuck off the actors.
He actually just hated actors. I got a question. It's a bit random, going back a bit. What was it like working at Disneyland?
It was fun. Like, lots of people like asked me about that. Like, it's a... it was a really fun experience. So, you know, I worked in Paris. I played a couple of like lookalikes there. So I was 80. I was the baby when I went there. Like, I auditioned at Pineapple Studios.
Oh, wow.
And I was 17. And they were like, you have to be 18 to work there. So it was like, when are you 18? And and I got hired as a couple characters there. Really fun experience. I think it was, you know, after sort of nearly 2 years of doing it was kind of like, I've had enough now. doing this sort of the same Disney shtick all the time. it was really fun. You do live in a bit of a bubble there. Like, you know you're not really aware what's going on in the real world because it's like you sort of live, work and socialize with the same people in this little bubble.
I've been in Big Brother.
Yeah, it is a bit like being in Big Brother. Yeah, like, you know, you...
But with Pluto. And...
with Mickey and Minnie.
But yeah, you know, you do... The drama just sort of comes home with you as well. Yeah. There's a lot of, you know... the combination's really nice. It was like sort of really nice uni halls, I guess. But yeah, it was fun. Like, you know, we got to go on our days off, could just go into the park and do what we wanted. You know, we got didn't have to pay to go in, and we could, you know, just go on our lunch, just kind of go who fancies going on the roller coaster or Space Mountain.
Space Mountain, classic.
Yeah. So we could do that. But yeah, it was fun. But I don't think people. I mean, there are a couple of people there that are still there from when I was there in 2008.
Oh wow!
I think, well, God bless you, because I don't know how long you could do that. And I was there when it was like the High School Musical phenomenon in Disney.
Right. Okay.
So like it was driving me nuts. It got to the.
So were you the Zac Efron?
I was about to say sweeping hair.
No. No, I was Bert from Mary Poppins, so Dick Van Dyke.
Okay, excellent. So he just goes up cool by Grimy Bubner stuff going around.
Yeah, right? Doing the whole chim-chiminy and all that.
But your accent was better.
Did you have to do, can I just ask, did you have to have the one-man band stuff on?
No.
Okay.
It was either just chimney sweep or when they jump into the paint and he has like...
So he's got the... Yeah. Pinstripe suit type thing.
It's a great movie. But yeah, the High School Musical, I've never been able to watch it since because it was just... kids were just obsessed with it there. Yeah, it was... Oh, it was, and the music was just all the time on loop, just High School Musical.
Oh, man. That does sound like a slight torturous kind of... I was going to say Guantanamo Bay, but that's not quite. Maybe
got a bit far. Who are you living with then in housing, character wise?
In the housing, this is my first housemate was the Zac Efron character, so I'd even have to hear him rehearse songs when I got back. So
oh, good, like, a break, last break.
Yeah. But then he moved on to America, I think, to Disney in Orlando. So he moved on, and yeah, then I just had a nice, quiet, Goofy lift me.
Okay. Nice.
Oh yeah, you take a Goofy over Zac Efron any day of the week.
Yeah,
all day. But you know, it was fun. I'm really thankful I wasn't in Disney when Frozen was the massive thing, because I imagine that would have just been endless if High School Musical was anything to go by. But no, really fun. I'd always recommend people to do it, like as a sort of for a year or two.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's really, you meet some great people. And again, like, you know, when you are going back to that sense of play, like, you know, when you're a character and you're kind of freestyling, you know, in Disneyland, you just have that sense of play and just... it can be challenging when it's like mid-January and Disneyland's dead and you're just told no matter what, you have to stay in character.
Really method and
like,
Bert.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're kind of like walking around Main Street with your chimney sweep on the back going, all right, what can I do around here sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
No one's about. Like, you might get the odd couple of kids in the mid-January. But yeah, it was great. It was fun.
I'm really getting vibes of another sitcom. I think this is a second sitcom in the workings.
Maybe, yeah, but the thing is, Disney would sue me so quickly.
Yeah, it'd have to be...
Yeah, you'd have to come up with your own kind of in a made-up Wally World type wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, just like little nods to stuff rather than...
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Theme park.
That sounds great. I think all performers at some point have got a similar story of some sort of job early doors they've done that's been useful and a good challenge and a good learning journey, but fucking mad at the same time. Yeah, I think it's just part of the process, I think. But yeah, it sounded good. Oh man, yeah, Goofy over at Efron. I think that's a good. I think that's probably quite a good life motto, I would say, Giles.
Yeah,
Goofy over Efron. Yeah, in a world where you can be Efron or Goofy,
be Goofy.
Yeah,
another T-shirt slogan there.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, we get these every week. Oh, Lawrence, thank you so much for coming on, man. It's been really good to see you and chat to you about the project and. Huge good luck with Keep Calm and Carry On. And it starts end of September, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, September 28th. Yeah.
Fantastic. I think, everyone listening needs to tune in and watch. Three episodes in a Christmas special. And yeah, I'm really excited to see it. And yeah, good luck with it. And hopefully Amazon will come around with a bigger budget for the next.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah, let's hope so.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it. And no worries, I hope Palace do all right. It was 0-0 at the weekend. And
Oh yeah, we
yeah, I think we were a bit
that.
Lucky. Yeah, we're a bit lucky.
Yeah, daylight robbery, I think, on our part. But
yeah,
but we'll take it.
We'll take it. Massively take it.
All right, guys.
Thanks, man.
Lawrence Prestige on the Blank Podcast. What an absolutely top bloke. What a great name. I didn't say it and stop.
I know, it is a good name, isn't it?
It's a strong name. A really, really strong name. In fact, it's a very, actually, I would say, TV and film industry sort of writery name. Like you see that name attached to a project and you think,
class. Oh,
this is going to be good. Classy. This is going to be decent. So I hope that name serves him well in the industry going forward. And do you know what? It was really nice hearing his process and how it all came together, his thoughts behind it. I'm genuinely really excited to see what he does next. We should say he talks about that in our patron section this week. So a bit of extra content for our patrons at patreon.com/plankpodcast. But I think he's someone that's got a very bright future and very exciting things to come.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've known Lawrence quite a while, obviously for his children's books, and we worked on a podcast together. And yeah, it was, it's lovely to see him again. I haven't spoken to him for a while, so it was really nice to catch up, and I'm really excited for him. I know he's worked hard on this project. So yeah, I think it's going to be really exciting to see. And I'm really, really happy that he's got this program's coming out on Amazon, and he's going to have a big platform to kind of show his stuff. And yeah, it's really great. Just really great.
Yeah. Top low. So keep calm, carry on. Amazon Prime, September 28th. Do check it out because it's going to be fantastic. And we thank Lawrence so much for coming on and giving us his time and being a great guest as well. So yeah, it was a lovely time. It was a lovely time. That's another week done. Another episode in the can. We're back. We are, you know, third episode back since our break now.
So yeah, we've got some interesting ones coming up. I think actually people will see over the next few weeks that we'll have some sort of slightly different guests on, which will be interesting.
Yeah. Yes, we are sort of moving away maybe from our more traditional kind of guests, and we are mixing it up. And I'm really excited to talk to people from some industries that we haven't really delved into before. So it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. And I hope the listeners will be equally excited and will enjoy the product that we bring them.
Indeed. So yeah, beautifully done. So if you're new, maybe this is the first episode you've found us, the first couple, please do subscribe. Hit that subscribe button because you'll be getting blank podcast episodes every Tuesday as a result, or Monday if you're a patron. Part of the perk is you get them 24 hours early. So yeah, welcome aboard, and we hope you enjoy them and genuinely excited to bring you our next few episodes, which are going to be a little bit different. So yeah. But that's about it. I think time to wish everyone a good week. Oh, what did we say the sign-off was last? Okay, I remembered it. So yeah, Giles, have a good week. Look after yourself. And crucially, don't get cancelled.
I'll try not to.
Media Podcast.